Welcome back, and thank you for joining into this week's podcast number 5, Automotive for Beginners and Do-It-Yourselfers, Do's and Don'ts. My name is Frank R. Schaefer, and I appreciate you being here this week. I will share with you my knowledge and thoughts of over 44 years of problem-solving experience. If you should have a basic question I could possibly answer, please email me at franks71camaro@gmail.com. Once again, that's franks71camaro@gmail.com. This week here, I'll be talking about beginning electricity. I'm going to mention this in detail because I heard many times from people they'll need a new car battery because their car just died on the highway or back road. I'll talk about the do's and don'ts of a battery. To start, a car battery is used for starting a car only. You do not need a battery while the car is running. The alternator takes over the electricity need. Not only does the alternator charge up the car's battery, but it produces electricity for your lights, horn, heater, air conditioner, power door locks, wipers, etc. Okay, now we're going to get into a little bit of DVOMs. Remember from other podcasts that DVOM stands for digital volt and ohm meter. Okay, should you have a problem with an alternator, you can place your DVOM on DC, which is direct current. Place the red probe on the positive red terminal of the battery first, then place the black probe from the DVOM to the negative of the battery terminal. While the car is running, see what number of voltages the DVOM says is coming from your alternator. The actual output voltage produced by your alternator will typically be about 1.5 to 2.5 volts higher than battery voltage. At idle, most charging systems will produce about 13.5 to 14.5 volts with no lights or accessories on. Once again, most charging systems will produce 13.5 to 14.5 volts with no lights or accessories on. On most cars, an alternator is not that difficult to change yourself. It's round and it's belt driven. You may want to purchase a hands manual book for your automobile from your favorite auto parts store to help you find your alternator and to tell you step-by-step instructions. Should you want to do this job yourself, it will save you some serious bucks. Or if you like, Haynes offers an online digital manual as well for the serious DIYs. It costs a little bit, but hey, if you're going to be doing this, it's well worth it because it'll help not only the car you're working on, but other cars in the future. And they come in months. You can buy the subscription by a month or by the whole year. So that's up to you, whether you want to do it at all or go to your local auto parts store and get a Haynes manual itself. And they don't cost that much, maybe $30, $40, somewhere in that range. Okay, now for a battery. A battery is like an electric capacitor, but on a different scale. Although both batteries and capacitors perform the same function of storing energy, the main difference between them lies in the way they perform their task. Batteries store and distribute energy in quick bursts, while capacitors store and distribute energy in short bursts. And by the way, capacitors are used in a lot, if not all, older cars and trucks for the points setup. The points have to be set to a specific number with a feeler gauge. This is located under the distributor cap for all you working on vintage cars, older vehicles. If you're working on something back from the 60s, 70s, early 80s, you're going to know what distributors are and distributor caps and wires. If and when you work on your electrical system, always disconnect the negative black terminal of your battery first. On the battery near the post, there are a positive sign, which is a plus sign, and the negative hyphen symbol. Please disconnect the negative terminal first. There's a specific reason for this. If you were to disconnect your positive first, okay, anything falls, a wrench from your positive terminal to your battery itself, it's going to arc. It could create a spark and explode. So you got to be very careful on that. So a car battery has six cells. Each cell has approximately 2.11 volts. It is 2.11 volts for a fully charged battery cell or 12.66 for a fully charged 12-volt battery. Okay, what does specific gravity mean for a car battery? Specific gravity is used to check the state of charge of a battery. It's the ratio of the weight of water versus the acid and water weight. Testing the specific gravity of a cell is done by using a hydrometer. Specific gravity for a battery is 1.265 times heavier than the same or equal water volume. Okay, once again, specific gravity for a battery is 1.265 times heavier than the same or equal volume of water. The electrolyte in a fully charged battery is usually 1.26 times as heavy as an equal volume of pure water when both liquids are at the same temperature. The battery's electrolyte would therefore be described as having a specific gravity of 1.260, meaning that its weight is 1.26 times the weight of pure water. Now, to use a hydrometer. In some batteries, on the top of the battery, the cover comes off and exposes the six cells. Remember, a 12-volt battery has six cells, 2.11 volts in each cell. Note, always wear safety glasses and latex gloves. Buy a battery hydrometer from your favorite auto parts store. Place the short hose into the electrolyte, which is water and sulfuric acid. Do not get on your bare skin or rub onto your clothes. It will burn a hole on your pants, though not immediately. Thoroughly wash your hands after the job is completed. Now, after getting a hydrometer and placing the hose into the acid, you squeeze the upper rubber bulb. Release the bulb and it will suck sulfuric acid into the hydrometer. Count the different color balls floating and look at the chart scale on the side of the hydrometer, which will show you if your battery state of charge is good or not. If you happen to have a weak battery because you possibly left something on and you can't get a boost, you can always get a battery trickle charger to slowly charge your battery. The slower the charge, the better. Should you need a quick boost now, you can always purchase a booster pack and you could carry this unit with you should you need to. I see the booster packs online for about $40. I see some for $59.95. Also, I've seen some, they were about $130, but they will last a while. When the booster pack dies or gets weak, you plug in the charger cord, just like a phone, to a 110 outlet. When the booster pack is charged up, it will let you know. You can always buy a booster pack at your favorite parts store. Now for fuses. Fuses we have available are mini fuses, standard fuses, and maxi fuses. They are plastic, and they got two prongs sticking out of the end. Now we'll go to fuse colors and amperages. A 1 amp would be black. A 2 amp would be gray. A 3 amp is violet. A 4 amp is pink. A 5 amp is beige. 7.5 amp is brown. A 10 amp is red. A 15 amp is blue. A 20 amp is yellow. A 25 amp is clear. A 30 amp is green, and a 40 amp is amber. Remember, a 1 amp is black, 2 amp gray, 3 amp violet, 3 amp pink, 5 amp is beige, 7.5 amp is brown. Some of the most popular fuses 10 amp is red, 15 amp is blue, 20 amp is yellow, 25 amp is clear, 30 amp is green, and 40 amp is amber. The 1 amp through 4 amps and 7.5 amps are not very popular as the rest. The most popular fuses are probably the 5 amps for automobiles' computer system. The most popular of all are the 10 amps for red, 15 amps, which is blue, 20 amps, which is yellow, 25 amps is clear, 30 amps is green, and 40 amps is amber color. There are a few ways to tell if the fuse is burnt or not. You can see if a fuse is burnt or not by removing the suspected fuse, hold the fuse up to the light. You can see if the filament in the inside is disconnected or burnt or not. This filament connects to one side to the other, almost like a bridge. If that bridge is burnt, your fuse is no good. Just think if you were on a bridge and the bridge halfway wasn't there any longer. It's broken. It's burnt. It's not there. You can't cross the bridge. Electricity is the same way. Okay? Electricity is the same way. You can't cross electricity from burnt out fuse. Okay, you should always make sure the test light works before you try to test fuses. If you open the hood, place the clamp on the red positive terminal of the battery and the pointed test light with the bulb in the inside. Touch the pointer on the black negative side of the battery, or you can touch most anything that is steel. The test light will light up for you. Now you are ready to test the fuses in the car. Remember, if the test light does not work on the battery, you can't expect it to work on the fuses. It's really easy to change a test light bulb should it be blown. A big caution: if you have to change a fuse because it's blown, do not use a higher amperage fuse in place of the one you've taken out. You can cause a fire and create more damage to the system than to do this correctly from square one. If the fuse in it, in fact, is no good or it's blown, there's a reason for this. Usually the higher amperage than what the amperage fuse can supply. Once again, you have more amperage than what the amperage fuse can supply. Maybe a wire is touching steel somewhere, or the power window motor is no good. Just a couple examples. Okay, a question I've received. What's most popular in the United States, the metric wire gauge system or the American wire gauge system? And my answer, by far the American wire gauge system, or the AWG, American wire gauge system, is a standard way to signify wire sizes in North America. In the AWG system, the larger the number, the smaller the wire diameter and thickness. Think about it. It's backwards than what you might think. The largest standard size is 0000 American wire gauge, and a 40 AWG is the smallest standard size. 000 AWG is defined as about 0.46 inches in diameter. That's nearly a half of an inch thick. Just the wire now, not counting the insulation on the top protecting the wires. That's pretty big. Now for soldering. Rosin core solder is used for soldering electrical components and wires. By the way, if you're learning how to solder wires, don't forget the shrink wrap tube around the wires before you solder, or electrical tape to protect the wires from hitting steel or each other. Solder is used in automotive electrical applications. It's an alloy typically made of 60% tin and 40% lead. Once again, solder is typically made up of 60% tin and 40% lead. Solder needs to change from a solid state to a liquid state easily and returns to its solid state again. So what is the melting point? What is the melting point of a 60-40 solder? If used in 60-40 solder, tin lead wiring soldering, there will be a varying melting temperature range, but the average is about 365 to 370 degrees Fahrenheit. Once again, 6040 solder has a melting point about 365 to 370 degrees. Solders are available in solid or fluxed core. Flux is needed to prevent the metals from being joined due to oxidation. Solid solder requires an external flux application to be applied in the soldering process. Flux core solder has a bead of flux within the center of the solder. The flux in a flux core solder can either be rosin-based or acid-based. Acid core solder is designed to be used on non-electrical metal joints such as radiators. Rosin flux solder is used on electrical connections because it is much less likely to corrode the metals than acid flux would. Now we are ready to start soldering. Always remember the safety glasses. No one is that good not to have safety glasses on. I teach my students that consistently. Always wear safety glasses. You have two eyes only. You can't go to the store and buy another one. You could go buy another pair of glasses if you have to. So leave it at that, please. Okay, so after twisting wires together, solder is applied with a hot soldering iron. Place a hot soldering iron on the wires to be soldered. Also place the solder touching the wires and the tip of the soldering gun or iron. The solder will melt within the wires. I would recommend thin solder. It's great for tight spots. Whether you're doing repairing a PC board, print circuit board that is, or you're repairing wires themselves. Now for wires with tracers. This can be a white wire with a red line going down the wire, also called a tracer. This will identify the wire from other wires. It may be red with a white tracer, blue with a yellow tracer. It can be any combination of the above, and then some. Some wires are solid color on purpose to identify the circuit being worked on, or finding them with a bunch of wires under the dashboard of your car. Example, a thicker yellow wire usually under the driver's side of the dashboard indicates the airbag wires. Caution, do not play with the wires in any way or touch it. It may deploy the airbag. How much do airbags cost for a car? Okay, after a significant accident, expect the total cost of replacing your airbags to range from $1,000 to $6,000, with most bills averaging $3,000 to $5,000. The average driver's side airbag can cost $250 to $800 in parts alone, depending on the type of vehicle you drive. Some cars have several airbags, not only the steering wheel, but the passenger side airbag in the dash, sides of the front seats, curtain airbags, etc. So be careful. Okay, now for boosting a car. I know a lot of people that boosted cars and trucks before that don't know the right way to accomplish this and why. This includes myself at one time. No one told me the right way, but I'm willing to tell you the correct way now. Hopefully, I will get you on the right track and explain why, the do's and don'ts. Now, steps for jumping the car's battery. First, connect the red clamp positive cable to the positive of the dead battery terminal. Second, connect the other end of the red positive cable to the good battery terminal, the car that's started or running. Third, connect a black clamp to the good or running car battery negative terminal. Fourth, connect the last black clamp to bare metal of the engine, either a bolt or a motor mount I like using, or someplace steel away from the battery. After the car starts, remove cables in reverse order. Okay, so why boost a car this way anyways? because as batteries become low on charge, or even a dead battery, hydrogen gases are emitting from the battery. These gases are extremely flammable. The gases would ignite and blow with any spark. So be careful and do this properly. Couple questions. Most common wire gauge for jumper cables. What gauge wire is best for jumper cables? A 6 gauge or a 4 gauge set of cables would be perfect for most vehicles. If you have a diesel truck, you may want to try a 2 or a 1 gauge jumper cables. This will be able to handle more amperage and not get as hot. Many lesser expensive cables, they get hot while cranking engines over because they can't handle the amperage that the car is producing. Speaking of amperage, let me delve down a little bit deeper. There are two types of electrical circuits, a series circuit and a parallel circuit. A series circuit is the simplest type of an electrical circuit. In a series circuit, there is only one path for current to flow. This also means that all the electrons flow at the same rate, which is called amperage, throughout all parts of the circuit. Let me give you an example. If you were to have a lesser expensive Christmas light set in a series circuit, that is, this means if one bulb was to burn out, they would all go out. You would have to try each bulb to see which one is out until you get lucky and find the right one. It's a lot of work and headaches. In my eyes, it's not worth it. You're better off spending the money for a parallel circuit set of lights. And don't bother asking the store attendant about the parallel circuit set of lights. They may look at you like you have two heads. They're going to say, what? You would have to look at the box of lights yourself. In a parallel circuit, there's more than one path for electricity to flow. If any component of a connection fails, you would still have current flowing because there are two ways of current to flow, not just one. Now, if you were to spend a little bit more money and bought those Christmas lights with a parallel circuit, now if one light bulb goes out, the rest would still work. Nice. Now you see which bulb is out and change that nasty bulb only. The Christmas light analogy is the best way I know to distinguish between the two circuits, series circuit and parallel circuit. Now you can spend more time with your kids or significant other rather than trying to find that nasty dead light bulb, isn't it? Remember, any questions at all, feel free to write to me at franks71camaro@gmail.com. Once again, that's franks71camaro@gmail.com. Okay, here we are. Once again, I know you can be spending your time doing something else, so I would like to especially thank you for spending this time with me. You will hear a new episode again in 2 weeks. This is Frank Schaefer signing off. Thank you once again. I appreciate it.